touchdown machine for the Houston Cougars.
Sasser again, just kind of taking over right now.
That's NBA stuff right there. He is a baller.
Stick it in your pipe and smoke it, baby.
Yes! Welcome to the Scott from Love Podcast, back in the uncommon time slot of this Sunday afternoon, Dustin. It's weird to be talking to you while there's still going to be 6 hours of daylight left for me out here. But really excited to talk with you, bud, but got to be honest, got to just rip the Band-Aid right, you know, off at the top here. I don't think we had a lot of questions answered about Houston Cougar football and what it's going to be this year in a positive direction, certainly, from last night's 34-27 Bayou Bucket win over Rice. I guess I'll say the nicest thing at the top, you know, for whatever the 2022 football season has in store for us, at least it's not going to include a loss to Rice. That's about the nicest thing you could say right at the start, isn't it?
Yeah, and it was not only do we not lose to Rice, the Cougs getting the Bayou Bucket back, but it was the fall sports rubber match, of course, because Rice beat us in volleyball, we beat them in soccer, so this was the fall sports Bayou Bucket rubber match. So excited to have 2 out of 3 sports over Rice to start the year that have faced in direct head-to-head competition. But yeah, kind of like you said, there's not really too much sugarcoating. I mean, there's certainly good things that we can take away from this game and talk about, but you can't really sugarcoat too much that it still wasn't that impressive of a performance overall.
Certainly not. We were, of course, at the top mentioning we are proud members of the 10-12 Network Big 12 podcast, the 10-12 podcast about all things Big 12. If you could, follow them on social media at TEN12 Network. Subscribe to the 10-12 podcast and numerous other great Big 12 pods wherever you put podcasts in yours. And of course, we are also brought to you by the good folks, the good brand, Homefield Apparel, homefieldapparel.com, makers of incredibly comfortable vintage t-shirts, college wearables of all kinds. Really awesome. Hundreds of schools in their collection. Of course, a great, fairly recently refreshed Cougar collection. You could save on that Cougar collection at any number of schools with great, great, great tees with the promo code Holman12, H-O-L-M-A-N-1-2. You could save 15% off your first order. Just enter Holman12 at checkout. No matter what you are buying, you can use the podcast to save you a little moolah. I want to mention real quick, I think in passing on the podcast Twitter account, but went to the Greek festival in my city, which is walking distance from where I live, and I wore my Auburn I'll Be the Tiger t-shirt to this event. It was pretty hot outside, you know, went with the t-shirt and shorts, and several drinks in, this, I would say roughly 10 years older than me, Greek gentleman, you know, very, very abruptly introduces himself to me. Oh, I love the Auburn Tigers. I'm not going to do any more accents here, but he talked about how much he loved the Auburn Tigers, and he got into the Auburn Tigers the 2010 Cam Newton season, and I'm not going to, again, at the risk of getting our podcast the ire of the Greek American Defamation League, Dustin, we'll just say he thought my t-shirt was pretty cool, and I even gave a brief Homefield Apparel plug there. So if you want to get bought Uzo shots by strangers, no better way than a Homefield shirt, but promo code Holman12, homefieldapparel.com, get you some Homefield and help our little podcast here in the process. So gonna jump right into it, do the postmortem, talk about Houston Cougars, probably more narrow than anyone on the Houston side of things would have liked, win over the Rice Owls, and talk real quickly on how this game was ultimately won by your Cougars. The Cougars struck first in this one. Neither team did much in the first quarter, but Cougs got on the board in the final play of the first quarter. Real nice throw and catch to Matthew Golden, who made a number of Owls miss in the open field. I thought it was a real nice reception. I felt as soon as Golden got the ball, this guy's not getting touched. This guy's getting to the end zone, but unfortunately, not much else went right offensively for the Cougars in the first half. Rice scored after a Cougar interception just on the wrong side of midfield. Have two surprisingly easy 50-plus yard drives for 10 points also. Closed the half, went into the halftime up 4 on the Cougars, the first time since 2007 that Rice has led at the half against the Cougars on the Houston campus. And I would say the offense improved somewhat for the Cougars after that fourth straight listless opening half. The Cougars had two pretty emphatic touchdown drives, including, I would say, one of the highlights of the season so far. Real pretty 40-yard bomb from Toon to Tank Dell, which opened the second half scoring. But unfortunately for all of the offensive highlights, the Cougar defense didn't seem at times to have very many answers to get the Rice offense off the field, more specifically the Rice passing attack, and maybe even more specifically than that, receiver Luke McCaffrey gave the Cougar secondary particular problems in the second half. Rice did mount three straight scoring drives to start the second half, and fortunately the Cougars were able to keep the Owls from getting into the end zone in the last two, and the Cougars were able to eventually tie the game back at 27 with a six-plus minute drive with 5 minutes left in regulation. The Cougars looked like they were about to end it there. The Owls' next possession, De'Anthony Jones sacks TJ McMahon, forces a fumble, which Nelson Caesar picks up and walks in the end zone for what would ultimately be the deciding touchdown. Tabo Mwaniki also picked TJ McMahon deep in Cougar territory, which unfortunately didn't result in any Cougar points, but it was certainly valuable enough of a contribution in a situation where the Cougar D needed to keep this team, you know, really from being on thin ice. So it was a good play at the right time, which unfortunately did not result in any additional points in the offense. And unfortunately, for the third time in as many close games, the Cougar defense showed a pretty stark inability to play anything like prevent defense. That combined with a just baffling decision from Daniel Holgorsen to basically give Rice a free play at the end there. And feel free to cut in, Dustin. Do I have this right? Like, it was kind of confusing to try to watch this in real time.
So
Rice wouldn't have had enough time to run a play, right? Or am I misremembering?
No, so that was my initial impression. I may be wrong, because I think the 3 second thing is actually if you're clocking the ball, if you're spiking the ball.
Okay.
You have to, so I think maybe with the first down, you would be able to get a playoff in 1 second. I'm not sure. I tweeted that after the game, but I think I may have been wrong about that. So I'll give Dana Holgorsen a little bit of credit before we eventually give Dana Holgorsen a significant amount of negative credit. We'll give him, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt here that I think Rice could have gotten a playoff there, is the conclusion that I've come to. Although we don't have Mike Pereira or some officiating expert that we can go to, but I believe he could have gotten the playoff. But still, I think it's still an interesting call though, in terms of do you give Rice also a timeout and a chance to drop a play there, as opposed to having to scramble and you know, throw something together at the last second. So it's an interesting decision either way, and it sure looks like there should have been 0 seconds on the clock either way, but mercifully the Cougars came out with the victory anyway.
Yeah, it wasn't the first time that crew got a little wonky with the clock too. So I'll withdraw everything I said with that, but obviously made that way, way, way more interesting. Thankfully, that last pass fell incomplete. The Cougars escaped with that one touchdown win and a seventh straight victory in the Bayou Bucket. So Dustin, I'll let you decide where we start with this one, but I gotta tell you, my biggest 30,000-foot takeaway from Saturday's game is that not a single thing that this team struggled with in the first 3 weeks of the season looked like it was fixed or close to fixed against Rice. Just the opponent got somewhat worse, and we saw the exact same problems of the first 3 weeks. That's just kind of where I am right now after this game.
Yeah, I agree. I think you tweeted it after the game, and it was exactly where I was thinking as well. That wasn't a better performance than any of the first 3 weeks. It might have been a slightly less good performance than a couple of the early, you know, the first 3 week performances that Houston put out there. But just the opponent got, it was Houston's worst opponent faced of the year, and so they were able to get the victory by one score. But yeah, I think the thing we have to start with, and I feel weird doing this because this is not normally how I would start a game recap. But I think you have to start the game recap by talking about what happened after the game, and specifically Dana Holgorsen's comments after the game, where he just seemed fed up with the concept of coaching, you know, just saying, quote, "I'm tired of doing it, man. I'm tired of yelling at them. I'm tired of motivating them. I'm tired of all that crap." Talking about, you know, having this one go down to the wire after it looked like Houston, you know, was going to get a semi-comfortable lead. "I've coached the same way for 35 years. This shit is hard and it's getting irritating." And not to mention then after the game also, when he was asked, or when he made comments about Houston's fourth straight game with 10 plus penalties, in which he said he did not take responsibility for the team's lack of you know, discipline, which is a decision. It's a bizarre, strange decision. It's just those quotes cumulatively, it's weird to see quotes like that after a rivalry win, that like you technically beat your rivals and your coach is just giving quotes like he's ready to quit coaching altogether at any moment after a win. So, you know, it's kind of like we said, it's not going to get any easier for Dana Holgorsen at Houston. He's got done facing Rice. He's going to go face an AAC schedule. And next year, this program's going to be in the Big 12 when the level of competition every week is only going to get ratcheted up. So if he is feeling that irritated after a non-conference schedule that featured, you know, UTSA, Texas Tech, Kansas, and Rice, I don't know, man. It doesn't get a lot easier. And it's just that I think the reason I'm okay starting the game recap there is because, A, that's a really bizarre, strange sequence of things for your head coach to say after a game. But also because I think that kind of tells you everything you need to know about the first four games of the season and whether or not we're being, you know, overly dramatic with some of our criticisms that we've had, you know, even though the team, you know, has played a couple of, pretty good teams and gone 2-2, which, you know, from the 35,000 feet looking down might not be the worst way to start your season, you know, devoid of context. But, you know, I think seeing your head coach that fed up after a win kind of tells you about the emotional state of this program right now, which doesn't seem to be the best heading into conference play next week.
You said three very important words kind of at the end there. Devoid of context, you're right. 2-2 doesn't seem really that bad, considering, you know, I'm not going to oversell what this Rice team is, but this is probably Mike Bloomgren's best team there. I think certainly a better team than the one we saw last year, but the context is just so loud after really the last 3 weeks of the season, you know, finding a way to lose it late against Texas Tech when it almost seemed like it would be easier to win that game the way you gave away a couple of key chances to win that one. And, you know, then really just looking listless last week against Kansas and not really looking a whole lot more engaged and lifelike this week, if we're being honest. Just like I said at the top, just the opponent just got a little worse. It's something you wouldn't have caught, Dustin, because you were obviously there in person taking in the game at TDCU Stadium, which, of course, for whatever state the program is in, where I wish I could be dearly more Saturdays than not. The TV announcers, who I thought actually did a pretty good job for an ESPN Plus crew, we're 4 years in now in this head coach, and the TV announcers are telling anecdotes about, you know, the coaches said, yeah, there are more guys in this team being more me first than last year. And then you have after this, the head coach going to the podium and saying that he doesn't take responsibility for this team being the most penalized in the sport. I think those are pretty unmistakable red flags. I mean, you're not going to say any game is it for you because, you know, let's just say this team, you know, something clicks and they win their next 8 games, and, you know, I'm not going to dig my feet in and refuse to adjust how I feel on something if, you know, the evidence points another way. But after watching this game, after hearing what this head coach had to say afterwards, just seeing the general body language of this team, I don't know what other than the most dramatic results would really make me be back on the bandwagon, really believe the head coach could get it turned around. It's just, if this roster, if the, you know, if your quarterback, I think in the post game, Clayton Tune very correctly and honestly, when asked to use a word, I think, to describe the first four games of the season so far, do you know what word he used, Dustin? Did you see that quote?
I did not.
Drama. And he's right. Like, he's 100% right. I am not, like, this is not me one iota going after Clayton Tune here, but it's a real statement when that's what your quarterback, number one, that's what you're, you know, face the program. That's his honest assessment of, you know, four games of a season where I think you had no higher expectations than any group of five program. Just none of this stuff is stuff you want to be seeing. And I think whether he believes it or not, this head coach who brings in a salary well into the seven figures, I think answers to that. Answers to the lack of discipline, answers to the inconsistent play, answers to the offensive scheme with no identity, answers to the defensive regression. Is that entirely fair? No, we give head coaches, I think, too much credit when things go well and too much blame. And I'm going to come at what he said, because I think, first off, I just want to preface it. What he said publicly, completely just unacceptable. I have no excuse for that. I don't mind if, you know, inside the locker room, he goes to the guys and says, hey, you know, I've had coaches, you know, I just remember from years of playing much, 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 much lower level sports, say, you got to take responsibility for what's going on inside the white lines, you know? This is your problem to fix. You guys got to take ownership. I can't keep going up there and doing this. I don't have a problem with him saying that inside the locker room, but to be the public face of the program and just say that you don't take responsibility for this team doing the same stupid crap each game, it's just really, 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 really what you don't want to see from your program and why I think I'm just feeling so down about this team through four games of the season.
Yeah, I think it's not a good thing, you know, all the things you're talking about, but I think I've said this before, but I just keep coming back to it. You know, I don't know if on either side of the ball right now, the Houston unit, I feel like both sides of the ball, the Houston unit feels like the whole is lesser than the sum of the parts. Like, there's not a total lack of talented players there. You know, I think offensively, Clayton Tune's a talented player. And, you know, Tazon Henry looked good again in this game, averaged over 6.5 yards in a carry. You know, had some big plays. Tank Dell, remarkable player, one of the best receivers in the country. I really believe that. But the offense doesn't feel like it is equal to the sum of all of those guys. Even defensively, you saw, you know, DeAnthony Jones, a big game, a pair of forced fumbles. You know, we've seen some just incredible stuff from Derek Parrish this year. You know, Donovan Mutton, you know, I think maybe part of Houston struggling. I know he was dinged up and didn't, I think he started but didn't play very much. And this one, I'm looking for his name in the box. I don't think he even...
No, he did not. It was almost entirely Jamarcus Cheeks and Manny Nunnery as your primary linebackers.
So
Jamal Morris, too.
Yeah, for sure. But broadly speaking, it feels like a team that is less than the sum of its parts, which a team that's just not hitting on all cylinders, you know, whatever the phrase you want to use is. And that comes back to the coach when he talks about the players not being, you know, disciplined and you know, that's who is responsible for bringing the players in, and then who is responsible for creating a culture where your players have discipline. Like, that's not somebody else's job. That's not an accident. That's what the coach does. The coach recruits the players. I feel like it's very silly for me to have to say that out loud, but it feels like the coaching. It's hard to say what this coaching staff is doing to justify being one of the highest paid in the group of five right now, and one that's going to be, you know, if it were to come in intact, it would be, you know, comfortably middle of the pack power conference salary next year. It feels like Houston should be getting more of a return on their money. You can criticize the fan support and you know, rightly so. This is a city and a fan base that doesn't support the program, and like we said, programs that have sold out games even when they're bad don't stay bad for very long as a general rule. But you can't really say that that the administration is not investing and that they shouldn't be. I think, you know, shouldn't be a team that looks like they have Shannon Dawson as their offensive coordinator, because they do have Shannon Dawson as their offensive coordinator.
And something I think different than the outside the penalties that I think also speaks to discipline. I thought the tackling on defense that we saw was worse. It was worse as it has been this year. Multiple defensive backs. I'm not gonna call guys out by name, but guys who have been in this program 3 or 4 years, or at least been in the college game for 3 or 4 years, just at times just throwing themselves at Rice ball carriers, the definition of bad form tackling on display. Again, as much as we've seen it this year, very much I think hitting and hoping, just throwing themselves at, you know, a Rice tight end and just being surprised when the Rice tight end absorbed that, you know, didn't see you guys really driving through, wrapping up, just the most basic stuff from, you know, guys who this isn't their first rodeo, you know, playing college ball. And again, to see, you know, whatever you think, however much you think Rice has improved, to see, you know, a fourth program at times, you know, I will say something nice here. I thought even missing Donovan Mutton, missing Derek Parrish for the second half, Malik Robinson's now been out for a couple games and will be out for the rest of the season. I thought the defensive front did a good job making Rice one-dimensional. I thought early on Rice might have got some stuff going in the run game, but I really, really thought that just they weren't able to do much outside of the passing game after, I don't know, you know, mid-late second quarter. The problem is they didn't need to. The problem is their passing offense was so effective. I guess the Cougar defense did get a little more effective when the field shrank down and they got into the red zone, but the fact that you just knew any time on Saturday Rice was going to get the ball and at least be able to sustain a drive. Like, just, I never felt like Dustin, when the Cougar defense got back on the field, that this is going to be a 3-and-out. This is going to be where the Cougar defense really changes the game until DeAnthony Jones, really nice strip sack, and Nelson Caesar took it into the touchdown. So I will say, for, I think, the third time in 4 games, even though the defensive effort left some to be desired in other areas, you did see the Cougar defense really pick this team up and give them a chance to win late, and I think that's admirable, but we also saw a lot of just really gaping flaws on Saturday that don't look anywhere close to solved, any more solved than they were, you know, post week one against UTSA.
Yeah, I think that's fair. We came out of the UTSA game saying, hey, it's good to to get the win on the road. But certainly there were some concerning things that you wanted to see addressed, cleaned up over the course of non-conference play to get you ready for the AAC. And I agree with you. I think if anything, Houston feels less ready to head into AAC play than I think they did after the UTSA game. And that's not encouraging because, you know, it's that was kind of the hope was, hey, that's what we saw last year. And that's, you know, the week one performance and that wasn't there. And then getting things figured out and kind of seeing the team progress over the course of the season. And you know, last year, you know, even when things went wrong, I remember talking about it at the time, hey, after the Tech game, even when a lot of fans were really angry, you heard nothing but positive quotes coming from everyone associated with the program, how much they believed in Clayton too, and how much they believed in the coaching staff and were still bought in on the vision. And that turned things around. It just doesn't seem like there's that same, anything close to that same spirit of everyone pulling in the right direction, trying to get this thing turned around heading into AAC play. So hard to be overly optimistic for sure.
Yeah, I did want to shout out some, I thought, admirable individual efforts. I thought Tank Dell was awesome. It was the every bit the difference maker that we expect him to be when the Cougars were able to get him the ball. On offense, just really cannot overemphasize it enough. The kind of deep ball that this offense just hasn't been able to hit this year, I thought really nice on the touchdown there. Again, want to reiterate that defensive front really making Rice one-dimensional, missing Donovan Mutant, Derek Parrish, and other key guys. Tajon Henry was a real difference maker in the second half when he had the ball in his hands. But I will say, I still feel like I have the same general gripes about this offense now, kind of like I was just talking about the defense, that I did a few weeks ago. I mean, the numbers look decent from this game, but if you watch this game, and also I think taken into context, this will not be one of your stronger opponents this year. I think 27 points in 9 possessions and 6.5 yards per play against this opponent isn't really that great of a game. I think is considering what this offense had coming back this year and what, you know, we expected. I don't think I have a lot of really strong positives there. I do feel like at times they were able to keep a cleanish pocket for Clayton Tune, make some more stuff happen in the passing game, but I would kind of hope you were able to do that against this opponent. I mean, if you can't do it against Rice, you have to start questioning, are you going to be able to do it against anyone on this schedule? So I don't know. I hate to be repeating myself, hate to feel like I'm just doing, you know, the same song, you know, different dance with the Cougar offense versus what I was just talking about the Cougar defense, but I don't know. Do you feel any better? I mean, I think, again, some nice individual performances in there. I think Clayton Tune had a better game, although I still think he hung Keshawn Carter out to dry on that pick. I don't know. I feel kind of the same in where I was coming to this game. Wasn't really in a great place in terms of believing what this offense can do.
Yeah, I feel like I had a pretty good idea what the Cougar defense versus Rice's offense was going to look like. That it was, you know, Rice was going to just score some touchdowns, but, you know, not totally take the game over. And you know, Houston's offense going against Rice's defense, scoring enough points to cover what you kind of knew your defense was going to give up. Feels like a pretty low bar to clear, and Houston did clear that bar, but not by a lot. So it is like, yeah, on the one hand, like you said, some of the numbers look really good. You know, 5.6 yards per carry as a team, 191 yards rushing, or I'm sorry, 178 net yards rushing. You know, that looks nice. You know, Clayton Tune almost, you know, close to 10 yards per attempt, couple of touchdowns. You did mention the one pick where he definitely, even though it was a deflection, definitely deserved it for, I think there was a, like the previous pass, maybe two passes earlier on the same drive where he also kind of led a guy into traffic over the middle and definitely, I think, deserved the pick that he did have. But, you know, like I said, like some of the things that the offenses did, but just not exactly consistent against what was one of the, you know, handful of, you know, worst defenses in the country last year, and has, you know, been kind of hit or miss in their two FBS results thus far this season. You know, I don't think Rice is going to be some top 50, top 60 defense at the end of this year, and that's if that kind of hit and miss, you know, nice drive here, frustrating, you know, couple of punts. I think what, one touchdown drive in the first half, just hard to get, yep. hard to get too excited about, even though it was, like I said, clearing the low bar of doing enough to win the game.
Yeah, I just think, again, to tie it all back, I feel like we just have all of the same questions and nothing close to satisfactory answers. And I feel like the college football season, it's a short season. You can talk about, well, it's only four games. Four games can tell you a lot of wrong things, but we're four games into a 12-game regular season. If you're not at least somewhat what you're going to be through a third of the season, I think that's very much stretching the bounds of the likely. I'm not sure. I'm not sure why we should expect any different for the subsequent eight games, Dustin. I really don't know. You know, why should we expect this team to come out, you know, against Tulane next Friday and look disciplined and not commit key penalties at, you know, bad times? Nothing this season would suggest that's going to happen. So I don't know, just not in a very positive place. I'm again not looking a gift horse in the mouth and, you know, being glad that we're not here talking about a loss to Rice and just the, you know, the psychic trauma is the wrong word. Trauma is not the right word for it. The wailing and gnashing of teeth that would come from, you know, losing a game to this opponent. We're not doing that this week, but that's about the nicest thing I can say. It just, there really wasn't a whole lot to make you feel warm and fuzzy about the next, you know, month and a half. And this team going to really being close to what we expect in the preseason.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing that if you want to hold out hope that you can hold out hope for is just that, kind of like I said, I don't think it's an untalented roster. And, you know, I've seen crazier things happen in college sports than a team like this, you know, having a closed door player meeting and, you know, hashing some things out and getting everyone on the same page and pulling in the right direction, kind of irregardless of what your coach is saying in public. And then, you know, maybe closing out the season strong. I think, you know, weirder things have happened, crazier things have happened. It's not a ridiculous thing to hope for, but, you know, if I have a gun in my head and what do I predict is going to happen for the rest of the year, that's probably not the universe, I guess, that we're living in. But I will be at the games, very much hoping to be proven wrong on that.
Yeah, gotta see it first from this team. That's the bottom line.
Yep. All right, Sam, I think we're ready to go ahead and jump into some hashtag forward reviews. Does that sound about right?
Sounds about right. I'm going to kick off with three that hit on exactly what we've spent a lot of the last 20-something minutes talking about. Tom had culture is coach's responsibility. Jordan and Levi both had the exact same one. I ain't taking responsibility. And our in-real-life friend Ryan had those post-game comments.
Jacob had one of my favorites. Win comfortably just once. That would be nice. Sean had underwhelming wins still count. And Renee was worried about conference play, which seems perfectly fair.
Nate had a pretty good one. 10 penalties, 110 yards. Just another week of double-digit penalties along sort of the same lines Coach Bro had, team problem or coaching. And two of you had a very similar idea. Shane had what a disappointing win, and Jake had winning feels like this.
And then a couple more. And Nick was one of the people that decided to go positive. He had Tank Dell, difference maker, certainly deserved there. David with the punctuation that really sealed it. Congrats on the win? Question mark. And then Robbie, I want to say congratulations to Robbie as he had my son's first bucket. And our friend, good in real life friend, podcast artist in residence, Bill, had it was his daughter's as well. So excited to see some young Cougs getting their first Bayou Bucket experiences and getting a Cougar win.
Yeah, he was telling me this morning about how she had a blast at the game. It's just like, I wish I could wipe my mind to have, you know, had an enjoyable experience from that football game. The only one I had was a longtime friend of the show, Sergeant Awesome, had I'm tired of Holgerson. And Sergeant Awesome, I really wish I had a good counter argument against that.
All right. I think that is as good a place as I need to go ahead and tie the bow on the 2022 version of the Bayou Bucket, which I should say, Houston's seventh straight win. I forgot to mention, I wanted to throw it in there somewhere, the longest now winning streak either school has had in Bayou Bucket history. So excited to be in, even though it didn't feel like it on Saturday, an unprecedented era of Houston's dominance over Rice. And with that in there, we'll just pour a little sugar on that as best we can right on the way out the door, and then we'll go ahead and jump into the week four of college football, looking around the country. Yeah, neither of us was right about the game to watch on Thursday. They both weren't that dramatic. And then Friday, other than I guess the only real Friday result that really jumped out was just UTEP beating Boise 27-10. And man, how things have turned for the worse at Boise State when you're losing by three scores to the Miners of UTEP.
attempted 34 passes and only got 93 yards total out of it. You will be not surprised to find out the offensive coordinator, Tim Plow, was dismissed Saturday morning. And very weird and interesting replacement to him, Dustin. And you'll see why I mention this in a second. The replacement is Dirk Cutter, who was on staff as an analyst, longtime NFL OC, was head coach at Boise in the late 90s. I don't know, Dustin, if you're Boise head coach Andy Avalos, are you kind of looking over your shoulder that the offensive coordinator is this incredibly accomplished pro head coach and former successful head coach from your very school? I mean, you don't fire the OC in year two if stuff isn't going mid-season, mind you, if stuff isn't going really bad. It seems like it's going really bad up there on the blue turf.
Yeah, not where they're used to where they're used to being at, for sure. And then the Saturday morning slate, I'm glad we hyped this up last week because I thought it lived up to that quite well in the number of interesting games that took place in the morning. I'll start with Kansas and Duke and, giving the Jayhawks some credit after that win, which, of course, last week when we were talking about that loss, we were, focusing more. We gave the Jayhawks some credit, but I think we focused more on the things U of H didn't do well. But, I mean, we should say, I think, this is a fun Kansas team to watch when they're playing against somebody else. They beat a 3-0 Duke team to get to 4-0 themselves. I think it says deserves to be said that this Kansas team, the offense they're running is really fun to watch and excited to see what they can do. And certainly, I think getting Lance Leipold in the National Coach of the Year conversation.
And it's just generally fun when a team that's not always good has their moment. It's not just, okay, Oklahoma is really awesome for the umpteenth year in a row. Insert name of blue blood here. That Kansas, who, sometimes they didn't get four wins in a 3-year stretch, is now 4-0 to start the season. And not 4-0 in a fluke way, 4-0 because they have a very good offense, because they got better defensively, because there just seems to be total buy-in for Lance Leipold. It's just insane, Dustin. It can't be overstated how insane it is that Lance Leipold is doing this, and he's been there like 15 months. He got there last summer. That in year two, they already look this good. They're already this bought in and executing at this high level. I think it's really exciting. I don't think right now there's anyone else who, barring a Kansas collapse, has a good case for a coach of the year outside of Lance Leipold. Just incredible, incredibly fun team to watch. Jalen Daniels, I think, if you don't have a conflicting Cougar game and Kansas is on a channel that most people get, I think is worth tuning for, at least in part. It's a very fun offense to watch. I've discovered when it's not going against the Houston Cougar defense.
All right, I guess I will rip the Band-Aid off. Also in the 11 o'clock slot, number 17 Baylor won at Iowa State 31-24. Yeah, just frustrating game as a Cyclone fan. And I will say that I thought Baylor was the better team, played better, deserved to win. Credit to them. But man, and again, I'm a total homer, so I'll admit that. But genuinely, I mean, even there was three personal foul penalties on Iowa State in the first half that the even the ESPN officiating crew was extremely incredulous at. And then a couple of hits after Iowa State starting safety got thrown out for targeting as one of those three penalties. Two hits by Baylor players in the first half that looked like targeting that didn't even get so much as a courtesy review. So it certainly felt like a refereeing crew that was actively trying to whip the Iowa State crowd into a frenzy, but nonetheless, I will get off my my officiating soapbox and give the Baylor Bears some credit. Played really well in that one. Looked like they deserve to be a top 25 team, even with the loss on the resume.
Yeah, a one touchdown margin where I feel like the one touchdown may not even fully convey that Baylor pretty much had this one. I mean, you could tell me if I'm wrong, but I think Iowa State had opportunities to flip this game, but I think, like you said, Baylor was the better team for the duration of that game. I will say this, and the calls were as bad as you say they were. I'm not going to deny that. This game got, I think, the most of my big screen. I think, you can tell me if I'm wrong here, I think I don't care, every Iowa State fan, lose your mind about those bad calls. Have yourself a ball doing, it's your prerogative as a fan to do that, especially if you're in the stadium within reason. I think Matt Campbell should compose himself a bit more in these situations. It really felt like, I don't know, man. I feel like the team feeds off the head coach, and you can be mad about the call. You can let the official have it, but you can also, I don't know, show a bit more outward cool when stuff's kind of pulling against you in the game. Because I feel like, I feel like off of some of those bad calls, Baylor really made hay, which, again, bigger fault there to the official making the bad call. But I don't know, man. I'll stop policing Matt Campbell's body language here, I promise. But that was just one very minor takeaway I had that we hadn't talked about.
That's fair, and it's hard to get too in the mood to chastise someone as an Iowa State fan when, you know, if you know Iowa State fans, it's part of their whole, like, you know, ethos that that they never get a, you know, flipping call from a Big 12 crew in any sport. So it is just, you know, I think if he was calling me, he might lose some fans in terms of like, hey man, like, you know, but I guess, you know, but I also appreciate that, yeah, the head coach is probably supposed to be showing a little bit more composure than, you know, the fans in the crowd are watching at home for sure.
Also, I hope his seat's not getting hot, man. Like, come on, like, he's Matt Campbell.
I'm not saying in, you know, in terms of a hot seat situation. I'm just saying that, you know, it's part of the Iowa State culture. You're supposed to, you know, their AD complains about the officiating as much as he can with, you know, and pays the fines and whatnot. It's just that's kind of expected, I think, if you're an Iowa State fan. It's just, you know, I'll stop defending it because I mostly agree with you that it probably wouldn't have hurt Matt Campbell to remain a little bit calmer than he did, even if that block below the waist call was the most nonsense thing I've seen all year.
Awful call.
Did we also mention in the 11 o'clock slot, a couple of top five teams almost losing. Michigan was able to hold off Maryland 34-27. Clemson got into an absolute Donnybrook with Wake Forest that went to double overtime. Really, really fun game. Had that one on second screen most of the morning. Clemson coming up just ahead in double overtime, 51-45. Just one of those. Just felt like everyone was going to score every time they got the ball. Wake Forest just, you know, chucking the ball all around. Quarterback set a school record 6 touchdown passes in that one. So a couple of fun games, even if would have really, really loved to see one of those, either Clemson or Michigan, taking the upset loss there, Sam. And unfortunately, I didn't quite get either.
Yeah, Wake Forest, I think, certainly has proven they're that perpetually in the 11 a.m. Central time slot team that's kind of entertaining. Like, I think Wake Forest has moved themselves in the pecking order for me. Like, if I need a second screen game for the early time slot, it was a really fun one. I'm sure heartbreaking the Wake Forest and not to win that, but I think still an admirable performance. Still, I think, incredible that Dave Clawson continually gets as much as he gets out of that program in the ACC. Mentioned also the Iron Skillet, TCU-SMU. Another game, kind of like I said with Baylor-Iowa State, I feel like the one touchdown final, and I think you give SMU some credit because this one was looking like it was going to be a lot more of a blowout early, and just TCU was never able to pull away, and I think you give SMU credit for staying in this one, but never really felt like TCU was going to lose this one, never really felt like SMU was anything other than second best, and I thought, I've watched a decent amount just randomly enough of Max Duggan the past couple seasons, Dustin. I feel like that was a different quarterback than I saw the prior two seasons. Looked actually somewhat confident as a passer, and, you know, and just, I don't think SMU certainly answered any questions about them potentially having an improved defense that could take some strain off of what I think is a pretty good offense, but an offense that's probably going to have to be in a lot of shootouts this year. I think if Saturday's game is any indicator for the Ponies.
Yeah, just not too many things happened funnier on Saturday than SMU just having a significant disadvantage in the crowd in their own home stadium, and then getting, you know, thrashed most of the game, and then, you know, having the you know, come back at the end where it looked like maybe they're going to make a game of it, and then ultimately losing. Very, very, you know, just couldn't happen to a better school than that, to be honest with you. The one other game from the 11 o'clock slot I did want to mention, not that the game itself was competitive, but notable in the absence of how it being competitive, and that is Louisville just taking South Florida out behind the woodshed 41-3. This USF fan base, of course, year three under Jeff Scott, still looking for FBS win number two under Jeff Scott, and after a really, really stunningly competitive game where they had a great chance to beat Florida last week, all of a sudden it's like, okay, they look like they maybe at the end, then just to get absolutely thumped by a not that great Louisville team. Man, the USF fan base, if Twitter is any indication, I think took that one pretty hard. And I think similarly to how U of H fan, I mean, you know, obviously very different situations, USF football and U of H football right now in terms of what the coaching staffs have accomplished at those schools. But, you know, I think similar in nature of a team that sure took a body blow on Saturday in terms of their belief and whether or not this coach is going to be able to get things done in the long run.
Yeah, I'm just having a hard time really seeing any way that this coach is able to, you know, win back that fan base. And I think win enough games to really want to invest a year four in the guy. This wasn't a must win for USF, but this was a must not get your ass kicked game. And I think 41-3 might undersell what an ass kicking this was. I just really don't think Jeff Scott's long for that job. And I think he probably has done a fair amount off the field, I think that was a real, real bad situation that Charlie Strong left after the 2019 season. But at some point, you got to show the on-field results. And I don't think, certainly through four games, that they've come close to showing that they're going to be any better than a 2-4 win team this year. And this is even a great AAC, and they'll probably win a couple AAC games, but if he's 3-9 this year, I don't think even the most optimistic USF fan can really talk themselves into being happy about a year four. Even a year four in a probably a little easier AAC being a worthwhile endeavor with this head coach.
And then getting into the afternoon slate, definitely some fun games in the afternoon slate. And I think you got to start with Texas Tech knocking off the Longhorns 37-34 in overtime in Lubbock, a game that the Longhorns led most of the way, looked like they were going to maybe semi-comfortably hold on to. And then Texas Tech kind of pulled the U of H script from the UTSA game, and that they got the game-tying touchdown, had the drive and the 45-yard field goal with 25 seconds to go up three, only to then give up the frenzied drive and last-second field goal by the Longhorns to tie it back up and send it into overtime. But then in the very first overtime, UT's all-everything running back, Bijan Robinson, loses the ball in a fumble, recovered by the Red Raiders, who then drove down and kicked the field goal themselves to get the three-point win. And yeah, just excited anytime the school in Austin loses, obviously. We're happy here at the podcast. Happy to see Texas Tech representing well, and we'll get into it, but both of the SEC departing schools lost to persisting Big 12 schools, so good day for the future new Big 12 conference. Good win for the Red Raiders, and I tweeted this, but I'm gonna say it here as well. It conclusively proves that U of H better than UT Austin, because they at least took Tech to two overtimes, and definitely do not use the UTSA game to also compare same opponents, because that one doesn't count. Only the Tech game counts. Houston is one overtime better than the Longhorns.
I think the only thing I have to add from, what you said was a very fun, bonkers Red Raider win over the Longhorns. Tech goes for it on fourth down 8 times in this game and converts 6 of those times. That's really cool. I think that's really exciting if you're a Tech fan. I know even before a game was played, they were pretty bought in on Joey McGuire and what he wanted to do there, and kind of the idea of what Joey McGuire led Texas Tech football is going to be. I think a pretty good starting point, at least in terms of a concept. And I think you can't blame Red Raider fans if they're pretty over the moon with how it's going 4 games in.
Yeah, and then another fun upset of a barely in the top 25 ranked team in that same time slot was Middle Tennessee knocking off Miami of Florida 45-31. The Blue Raiders, who, mind you, got beaten 44-7 in week one by James Madison. That same Blue Raiders team went into Coral Gables, was up 24-3 late in the second quarter, and then basically just traded touchdowns with the Hurricanes the rest of the way, winning by 14. And just bizarre result. I mean, again, James Madison's not a bad team, but getting thumped that thoroughly by a brand new FBS team, and then a couple weeks later going getting your program's first ever win over an AP top 25 team has been, I guess, kind of a roller coaster for Middle Tennessee State fans thus far this year.
No doubt. And this isn't one of those situations where just everything bounced Middle Tennessee's way. If anything, 45-31, I think, doesn't fully convey what a butt-kicking this was. I think Miami had 3 turnovers in fairly advantageous spots for the Blue Raiders, and the Blue Raiders only turned that into like 10 points, I believe. Dustin, the line from 2 Middle Tennessee offensive players is absolutely bonkers. Their starting quarterback, Chase Cunningham, 16.8 yards per attempt, Dustin. The even more wild stat line, though, is Blue Raider receiver DJ Englund-Chisholm had 2 receptions, 169 yards, both of those receptions, 4 touchdowns. Have yourself a day, DJ.
Wild. Also in that afternoon, a really nice result for the current AAC future Big 12, Cincinnati beating Indiana pretty handily, 45-24, previously unbeaten, 3-0 Indiana. Really nice win for Cincinnati. Quarterback Ben Bryant absolutely throwing the ball all over the place in the first half, had over 300 yards and 4 touchdowns just in the first half alone, as Cincinnati built up a big lead and then had no problem holding on to win by 3 touchdowns. So, having rebounded quite nicely from the season opening loss to Arkansas, the Bearcats now find themselves 3-1, and I think if you took a straw poll right now, they might be my pick for favorite in the conference, despite even after that season opening loss.
Yeah, I think I don't think there's really an easy case you can make for anyone right now, four games in, to be a favorite in this league. And yeah, they kind of cooled down at the half, but I don't think any real nits to pick there. Just hit a ton of big pass plays in the first half. Ben Bryant, I think, starting to look pretty confident in that offense under first-year coordinator Gino Gadugli. I could say that definitely. So yeah, I think even that opening loss at Arkansas, I still don't think you look back on it and think, oh, this is a bad Cincy team. They just went into a good SEC opponent stadium and came up just a bit short. I think, yeah, with you, that's definitely my AAC favorite at this point in the year.
Also, another AAC team playing on the time slot. Memphis with the win 44-34 over North Texas. I haven't seen one result that just gives me a strong, super strong opinion either way over Memphis. I just kind of, my opinion is that they're kind of meh and it has stayed there. But that 44-34, kind of a surprising way that you got there. If you've been following Memphis, they have that Seth Hennigan at quarterback, threw for 1 million yards last year, has been piling up the yards this year. So you see Memphis winning 44-34. You go, oh, Seth Hennigan threw for a bunch of yards again. Right? Seth Hennigan, 29 pass attempts, 141 passing yards in this one. But Memphis, a couple of interception returns for a touchdown in the second half there. So, yeah, I don't know, still not quite sure what to make of this Memphis team. And their next, their only other game between now and when they play Houston in a couple of weeks is at home versus Temple, which I assume that they'll probably pretty comfortably handle that one. So you got a 3-1 Memphis team, but I don't know. I'm still not sure exactly what I think of them even after the win over North Texas there.
Yeah, haven't looked convincing against Arkansas State or UNT, who are probably not bad group of five teams, but I don't think teams they're going to be serious contenders in their respective conferences. Yeah, like you, still not really sold on this Memphis team being anything better than right around bowl eligibility, but obviously still too early to say that definitively. Still not a matchup in the Liberty Bowl in a few weeks that I'm really wild about the Cougars doing great in.
Yeah, and then I did just random game that caught my eye. Man, if you want to talk about a chaos team, and I was mentioning this to our good friend Bill when we were talking about sitting at the game on Saturday. Absolutely no school in the country has had a wilder first 4 weeks of the season than Appalachian State, who opened the season scoring 40 points in the fourth quarter against North Carolina and losing anyway. Then week two, they beat Texas A&M. Then week three, they host College Game Day and win on a Hail Mary. And then week four, hosting James Madison, who gets another reference in this podcast. They took a 28-3 lead at home and then subsequently gave up 29 consecutive points to lose 32-28. Man, we should have been doing an App State football podcast this year because I don't know if there's an App State podcast out there that we can find, but I got to imagine those guys have just content for days because that has been just one of the wildest four-game stretches you can imagine.
I probably would have had a coronary after the Hail Mary to beat Troy last came out. Yeah, no, absolutely wild start to the season. Shout out to the Dukes who've looked pretty good in their first season transitioning up to Division I FBS, and I thought it was pretty cool. I did a tiny bit of research on this. JMU starting quarterback Todd Senteo has had a very interesting, well-traveled college career. If it's a somewhat familiar name, he was actually kind of a quarterback slash all-purpose guy for Temple in the latter days of Jeff Collins after the new staff came in there, transferred to Colorado State, didn't really go so hot for that staff at Colorado State. Senteo has, I believe, one more year of college eligibility, goes out to James Madison, and ends up being a pretty good starter for them in their first year of Division One. So bully on Mr. Senteo, bully on the Dukes as they've had this real magical start to the highest level of college football, their time in the highest level of college football, excuse me.
Yeah. And I'll just quickly mention a couple of other games in this slot. Just some teams that have traditionally not had a lot of success. Having some success has been, I think, one of the themes of 2022 thus far. And you see that with Minnesota, who's now 4-0 after absolutely thumping Michigan State in East Lansing 34-7, a game they just were in control of from the start. And then Washington State with the nice win over Wisconsin earlier this year. We're hosting Oregon, big game for them, really dramatic one that ultimately saw the Ducks come back wildly with 29 points in the fourth quarter to win 44-41. So disappointed. Would love to see the Cougars get the result. But enjoying kind of the run that the Golden Gophers are on. And Sam, kind of like I said, enjoying the early season theme of 22 and just seeing some historically unsuccessful football programs have their moment of their day in the sun.
Hey, Dustin, it's another historically unsuccessful program that won on Saturday.
Tell me.
The UNLV running Rebels, baby. 10-point win. 10-point win in Logan over the Utah State Aggies. UNLV off to a 3-1 start, I believe, for the first time since, like, the 2009 season. I think not going to oversell it, but secretly decent UNLV. Dustin is no longer a rumor. Secretly decent UNLV and very fun to watch quarterback Doug Brumfield have now arrived.
All right. Yeah. Also, we mentioned a couple of AAC games in that afternoon time slot. UCF getting the 27-10 win over Georgia Tech, and you know, hard to. I think if you're a UCF fan, even though it's a you know, it's a 3-touchdown win over technically a Power 5 opponent, I think hard to be real excited about that one. Georgia Tech looks like one of the worst Power 5 programs out there, and if you're UCF, I mean, yeah, it's a. Anytime you hold your opponent to 10, you got to be happy with the defense. But, man, offensively, the John Rhys Plumlee, you know, 16 pass attempts for 49 yards and a pick in this one. Just still that offense, not the most impressive thing about that program. And just, I think, a major, major question mark for the Knights heading into conference play.
Yeah, I think that passing game is going to hold them back if they have real serious aspirations of being up there with Cincinnati contending for the conference title, because they seem to be a good team in a lot of other areas. I mean, you can't blame UCF's loss to Louisville, I think, on their defense. And I think you can't say a whole lot bad about giving up 10 points to Georgia Tech, even though Georgia Tech is pretty, pretty awful this year. But yeah, a lot of UCF fans, I think, seem pretty fed up with this iteration of the offense, and an offense that, you know, wasn't amazing the second half of last year, but Mikey Keene at least had them a good deal above where this UCF team is right now in terms of throwing the ball. So I think some understandable concern in the Knight fan base.
Yeah, one other AAC versus a Power 5 opponent game I wanted to mention. Tulsa losing a pretty close one at Ole Miss, 35-27. Davis Brin, quarterback for Tulsa, got hurt early in this one, had to go to backup Braylon Braxton. And despite that happening, and despite Ole Miss going off for 4 touchdowns in the span of 13 minutes in this all in the second quarter, Tulsa, I think, other than the second quarter, was the better team. You know, significantly the rest of the game, the comeback didn't quite get all the way there at the end. Ended up losing by one score. But you know, this is a Tulsa team that, you know, they had that close loss to Wyoming in the opener. I think this team is not too far from being 4-0, despite, you know, having to try to, you know, scratch their way back in the at an SEC team, at a top, you know, 20 SEC team on the road with their backup quarterback. For them to you know, give up 0 second half points and make that a one score game was awfully impressive.
Yeah, I don't know if I was super sold on them going into this game. I think they were the number one passing offense coming into the game in the country, but it's kind of like, okay, you're the number one passing offense against, I wouldn't say really the toughest slate of teams come into it, but I think they showed you everything you could hope for and then some against a good SEC opponent. To be able to lose Davis Brin and still do as much as they did against Ole Miss at Ole Miss, I think pretty darn impressive. I think, like you said, not very far from being a 4-0 team. I think a team worth taking seriously, especially with not very many teams outside of Cincinnati really showing themselves to be a consistent, proven commodity to this point in the year. I thought really impressive showing from the Golden Hurricane.
And then a AAC conference game, a surprising result for me.
Yeah.
Navy beating East Carolina 23-20. Very weird game. Went to the fourth quarter 3-3. Then in the fourth quarter, you saw the only 4 touchdowns got scored in the entire game as it went to double overtime. All got scored within 5.5 minutes of each other in like the first half of the fourth quarter. And then it went to overtime 17-17. And then ECU just not able to get into the end zone. Navy kicks the field goal in each of the first two overtimes, gets the win. And man, if you're East Carolina, you felt like you had some momentum with some of your results in non-conference play. You know, the close loss to NC State, the big win over Old Dominion. And then you try to roll that into a successful AAC campaign. You get a really struggling Navy team at home to open up AAC play, and to not be able to pull that one out, that is definitely got to be a gut punch for Pirate fans.
Yeah, really disappointing and surprising result. I thought ECU was going to not really have too much of a problem winning this comfortably just from what we'd seen from Navy the prior few games. And just, this is kind of something that's been ECU's bugaboo. I mean, I think they really showed strong improvement on the defensive side of the ball last year. I think they showed a lot of good through the first few weeks of this season, but that offense would just go missing for long, long stretches. And you kind of look at it and you think, okay, yeah, Holt Naylor's not a bad quarterback. That running back pairing, they had Rajai Davis and the other guy's name who I'm spacing on right now. Pretty good running back tandem there. And just the sum of that never really adds up into above average offense or anything consistent. Just, you saw last year, it was almost like at times U of H was begging them to win at TDECU, and just they just could not get their offense just in order enough to win that football game. So yeah, just another very vexing result. Not that ECU doesn't have time to potentially recover from this, but I think you worry almost what this loss says about the fundamental flaws in that team and just how you could go from really being average kicking away from beating NC State in week one to losing to one of the worst Navy teams we've seen in the last decade or so.
Keaton Mitchell is the other running back for East Carolina. But yeah, definitely a rough result there. And then a couple of evening games. Really, I have to pair these together just because this is the madness that is college football encapsulated to me. Last week, we saw Tulane upsetting Kansas State. So we figure, oh, Tulane must be a pretty good, Kansas State maybe not that great. So what happens on Saturday evening but Tulane losing at home to Southern Miss, and Kansas State goes on the road and beats Oklahoma? Because of course, why would that not happen? This is college football after all. But yeah, man, talk about a gut punch loss for an AAC team that was needed a big season in a big way. Tulane starting the season 3-0, getting a much-hated Southern Miss team at home, and getting a lead early, and just not being able to hold on to it. Offense kind of going missing in the second half, and you lose to Southern Miss, who doesn't look like any kind of vintage Southern Miss team or anything like that. So definitely a couple of head-scratching results, and if you're an American Athletic Conference fan, definitely not the one you wanted there in terms of Tulane getting a win they probably should have had at home.
Yeah, I guess you could talk about it being a letdown spot, but I don't even think I'd really entertain the possibility that Southern Miss, which just, again, not really an amazing team by Southern Miss standards, goes into Yule Minute, wins that game, and really, again, 27-24 final, but that was a 24 that Tulane got a very late touchdown to cut, to 3. I think it was a game that Southern Miss controlled pretty comfortably, and kind of inexplicable, I guess, other than, maybe Tulane being an inconsistent, offensive team to this point, which I don't think was solved when they beat K-State a week ago. And I think to get to the other game, I think I said verbatim when we previewed this week that just really struggled to see a K-State team that seemed to have fundamental issues throwing the ball being able to go into Oklahoma and beat a, Brett Venables coach defense. And boy, was I wrong about that one. K-State finished with just under 300 yards rushing, really controlled that one. I think Oklahoma was pretty poor situationally on third down in this one, and just maybe showed that they have some of the same kind of issues that last year's Oklahoma team had to work through, and made that team just below standard of reaching the Big 12 title game.
Yeah, go figure. You got the Oklahoma, roster full of, 4 and 5 star talent. You got Brett Venables as head coach, one of the most well-respected defensive minds in college football, facing a Kansas State team that was looked like they couldn't score to save their life against Tulane a week ago. So, of course, they gave up 41 points and lost because why wouldn't they? The other kind of, didn't quite get the upset. The other Pac-12 didn't get the upset of the, highly ranked team by the historically struggling team. It was a disappointing Pac-12 week. You didn't get Oregon quite losing to Washington State, and then USC just barely being able to hold off Oregon State scoring the other winning touchdown on a pass in the last minute and a half of that game to get a 17-14 victory over the Beavers, a game that none of us could watch because, unless you're pirating it somewhere or you have, what was it, Fubo or whatever the one streaming service that has Pac-12 networks is, that I just refuse to make my decisions based off of. Would have loved to have seen this game, but alas, such was not what we got. And if you wanted to see that USC upstate upset by the Beavers, which certainly, everyone that's not a Trojan fan in college football was pulling for that one, didn't quite get the upset there either, Sam.
Yeah, good data point if you're a Trojan fan. This is as good of an Oregon State team as there's been in a while, and in the fourth game of this head coach, that they were still able to go in there and get an ugly win, but a win nevertheless. I don't think that team has like college football playoff level ceiling, but probably the best USC team, unsurprisingly, in several years.
All right, Sam, that's all the games I got. Did I miss any interesting or worthwhile games from Saturday that you wanted to talk about?
Nothing worth mentioning, but real quickly, ULM got a rare win in the directional Louisiana rivalry, 21-17 in Funroe. And Miami, Ohio broke a very, very, very long non-conference losing streak by winning 17-14 at Northwestern. I give a couple of the G5s tougher places to win a little shine here at the very end. But that is all I got for the week one slate, and I think for this episode at large.
All right, sounds good. We'll go ahead and leave it there then. On our way out, as always, going to give a big, big, big thank you to our Patreon supporters. Very much appreciated by Sam and myself that y'all continue every month to put some dollars behind the hard work that Sam and I put in on a regular basis into this podcast. And if you do enjoy the Scott and Holman podcast regularly, if you do feel like you can afford a couple of bucks, we would love for you to go to shpodcast.com/support, where you will find links to make a recurring monthly donation on Patreon, make a one-time donation on PayPal, or buy some merchandise with our street sign logo on it. We'd also love for you, the listener, to reach out and say hi to us. You can email us shpodcast@gmail.com, and you can tweet us at shpodcast. That's it for us. If you made it all the way to the end, you are an absolute rock star. And as always,
go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Vamos los Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
We ain't invited to the party. We had to kick the door and no.